And then suddenly you build value because the system, the generative system, is a black box that allows you to input something that makes sense to you. And then it reflects, final product reflects what the system has been doing.
Hi, everyone. Welcome and thank you for joining me. My name is Franco Vriano, and I'll be your host for the Tech Plus Art podcast. Tech Plus Art is the community for curious individuals and creators who are looking to make a dent in the universe. Together, we're exploring the new frontiers of creativity, humanity, and how emerging technologies will continue to shape our culture, professions, products, and much more. Join me on this journey as we speak with artists, makers, researchers, designers, and creators from all backgrounds and fields. Tech Plus Art is an inclusive community, and we make our content for you. So we want to hear from you. If you have any feedback, suggestions, topics you'd like us to explore or contribute to yourself, reach out to us on Twitter or via the website. You can check us out at maketechart.com or at maketechart everywhere else. So with that out of the way, let's get to today's episode. Today we're joined by Alexis André, a researcher at Sony's Computer Science Laboratory and a generative artist. Alexis is originally from France, but has lived in Tokyo for the last 15 years. Through his work at CSL, several of Alexis' projects have been commercialized, including a new toy platform called Toyo. Alexis has also been involved in many projects that involve creative coding and generative media, from the launch of a music visualization app called Eon, to his daily art project using a new programming language called Nanu, and more. Today, his work focuses around creativity and entertainment, pushing the boundaries of individualized experiences and design forward through technology and procedural generation. You can explore some of these projects and more by checking out his website at alexisandre.com or visiting the links in the show notes below. So let's get to it. Hey, Alexis, thanks for being on the show today.
Hello, Franco. Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. I'm super excited to have the opportunity to speak with you and to learn more about your story and what you're focused on today. So let's start there. Can you tell us a little bit more about yourself, like where you're from and what it was like growing up?
So I'm actually born in Paris. I'm French, and I've been living in Tokyo for the past 17 years so far. So it's been a really interesting journey, to say the least, to switch from the... Really, my path was kind of really straightforward. I was in public school. I did very well at engineering, so I went into an engineering school afterwards. And I was going to be the typical software engineer type that you might find in any big company. And then at the end of my studies, I was like, yeah, I think I'm not ready yet. I haven't seen the world. I need to do something different. And just at that time, the guys who were in charge of studying abroad in the university came to see us and say, well, if you want to study in Japan, or in the US, the deadline is going to be next week. Are there any volunteers? And I was like, I have no idea what it's like to go studying abroad. I have no idea how Japan is actually is. I've been watching a few animes in my youth, and that was the only image I had. So I just said, yeah, why not? So I just applied for the program, came to Japan without knowing the language, without knowing anything. And then 17 years later, I'm still here. So I guess it's a good fit for me. And then I completely switched what I've been doing. I went from studying, at the time it was still called machine learning. Recently people will be calling it artificial intelligence and whatnot. And then I switched to computer graphics. And that's where I started to learn about how people are perceiving things, or people are thinking about shapes, or people are thinking about colors, or people perceive beauty. Why do they draw a specific line? And I started to study about computer vision, how perception, how the brain works, and everything. And then it started to click in a sense that, yeah, I don't know why, but this is nice. And then if you want to do research on this, it's really hard because you cannot put a number on beauty. You cannot put a number of really subjective topics. So the only way for me to pursue this type of work was to just like do it and basically get a feel about how people would respond to whatever I was making or drawing and everything. And that's how I end up basically in the position where I'm at right now. That is, my day job is I do research for Sony. Most people have heard about Sony, I guess. And I'm in this very specific, very small lab. It's only like 30 of us. And we basically can do whatever we want as long as it's not hurtful for Sony. It's like the goals we have is like it should be useful to mankind, then society, and then Sony in this order. And in this research lab, I'm in charge of basically entertainment, how we can use new technologies to create new interactive experiences, how we can use generative processes to create a new generation of entertainment that would be a little bit more interesting to the users, not something that is mass produced, but is mass customized to each individual user. So that's my main research and that's my main work. And within this, I'm using a lot of generative techniques. I'm using a lot of interesting algorithms to come up with generative systems that end up in what I do when it comes to creating animations, creating items, creating pictures and everything. So that's my main journey so far, from really traditional IT computer science background to something that is a little bit more on the aesthetic sides of the science. Yeah, all this knowledge that I have of about computer graphics.
Yeah, that's super cool. Excellent overview. It sounds so dynamic and exciting as an evolution, and I'd love to explore different parts of that as the conversation goes on. But before we start discussing some of those topics, can you tell us at what point did generative art, the aesthetic side of computer science, become a realization of something that you could pursue?
Well, to be fair, when I was still in the school in France, there was this VJ club. So it was the beginning of the early 2000s. And like we had a projector, basically. That's what's the big piece of equipment that we had. So we had a projector and we were able to use all the student parties that we had at the school to test whatever crazy pictures we could put on the screen. And at the time, I was more interested into the tech side of things, like how do you hook up a bunch of projectors? Because like I think a video mixing table doesn't make any sense at the time. It was like it was all analog signal processing in the end, where you had those crazy, weird tape effects that you could have on a mixing deck. And I was really into that. And there was another guy that made all the visuals for what we were doing for the events. So he was the one generating the visuals, and I was the one playing them in the parties. And then that's when I started to learn Blender. And my first go at this was trying to follow tutorials that were really sparse online at the time about Blender. And it was like so hard for me to understand what was happening with the software. And coming then to Japan, switching to computer graphics after a few years, that's when it started to get interesting, because I don't know why, but the lab I was in was really focused on Java. Like they only wanted to use Java. So it was 2004. And so when you said in 2004, you were doing computer graphics research, it was only C++ and OpenGL at the time. Like there was nothing else. Why my lab chose Java, I have no idea. But then I think I Googled like something like graphics Java or something like this. And after, I think it was 2006, I found processing basically. By just Googling graphics and Java, and I was able to find processing. And I found, like, of course, Casey Reese, Ben Fry, the two guys who built processing. And then I just found their art, basically, what they were doing with the software they were creating. And I was like, that's really cool. That's something I can understand. It's not Blender in the sense like you're not building the 3D shape, you're not building everything, then you're animating them. It was really, they were programming with code, and the code was making pretty pictures. And I was like, oh, this I can do. This might be something that fits exactly my way of thinking. And from then on, I was like, I still use processing half of the time. I'm still a huge processing nerd. But I was like really catching up to all those guys that were using processing. So Jared Tarbell was also a really huge influence, because he's the one that had the most complex code, I guess, online at the time. And I learned so much from them just by looking at the codes they were publishing, and also especially from Casey Reese, because he was putting text along the picture he was making. And I think something that had the most impact on me was, I think it's called the process series that he's doing, where he's talking about the picture he's making, but just in terms of text. And the text can be as really simple as take a bunch of circles, move them around. Every time a circle gets close to another circle, draw the interaction of the circles. And that's the description for one piece of his. And I'm like, yeah, that's it. But there's so much in between the words that is up to interpretation. How do you draw the interaction between two circles? Do you draw a line between the two centers? Do you draw the area that overlaps between the two circles? Which color do you use? Do you use something that depends on the distance? Do you use black or white? Do you use something else? And I was like, oh, okay, those guys are into something really interesting, because if you're not coding, you cannot express exactly what you're doing, because the words are not enough to explain the whole process. And I was like, oh, this might be fun. And then I just went through this. I think it took me 2 or 3 years where I was just like copying them, basically. I was just looking at what they were doing. Sometimes they had the code, sometimes there was no code available. And I was like, how did they do this? How are they making this effect? So while I was learning computer graphics at school, I was also trying to reverse engineering what they were doing. And that's why I learned a lot of techniques. I learned basics of interactions like geometry. Like you think you know geometry until somebody asks you, how do you draw the line between the 2 points that are intersected circles? And like if you're able to answer this question really quickly, you basically know 2D geometry very well. If you need to check the formula, then you're like it's okay. That was basically how I found the field of generative art, was just by Googling graphics Java because of the conditions that I had at my university, finding the processing environment, the processing guys. And from then on, I just like went through the whole process of studying the classics, I will say, how they were doing it, and mostly the creative process that was somehow explained by those really simple text pieces by Caesaris.
That's super, super interesting. And so how did you evolve from that point to the generative work you do today with the Daily Art Project as an example? What was that evolution from processing to the language you're using today with a tool called Nanu?
So while I was still doing those, well, I wouldn't say art pieces because it was mostly studies in processing, I had basically no motivation. It was, oh, this looks cool. Can I reproduce it? But there's no like real creative process behind this. It's just mostly to master the tools rather than being able to create something really new. And to be honest, I was doing mostly interactive installations at the time. So I was collaborating with a friend of mine here that is producing some really nice chill art events with live performances. And he gives me a corner in the space all the time to try something interactive and fun. But those projects were like huge installations. So you have to manage multiple devices, multiple screens. So I did something for a New Year event. I think it was for 2000. I don't remember the year. But then I asked all the people in the room to input their name on an iPad, and then just by taking the name, I was making a mosaic of all the names of the people in the room, and I made like a logo for the year using all the names of the participants in the room. So it was this kind of installation based work that was most interesting for me. But then I was like, I miss I would say the instantaneity of seeing a picture or just an animation and just being, wow, that's nice, I want this in my room, or I just want to look at this. There was Zach Lieberman from Open Frameworks that posted on Medium his daily art practice. And I think he was talking about the year 2016. And I happened to go back home to spend the holidays with my family. And I was like reading this piece about how Zach is doing a daily challenge somehow, because he doesn't consider it a challenge per se, because it's just posting whenever he has something new. But in the facts, he's always posting something new every day. So it's not a daily challenge for him, but it's becoming a daily thing for him. So I was like at home reading this, and I'm like, okay, this might be something that I can do. I can do a generative piece every day, because the kids are small at the time. Well, they're still small, but when they're asleep, I have a bit of free time, like from 9 p.m. to whatever I want. What do I do? Do I watch TV? Do I read a book? Or maybe I could just program for a few minutes, a few hours, and do something. And I was like, okay, but do I want to do this in processing? And I'm like, why not? But then still the engineer part of me was like, well, you might as well learn something new. So I started to do this daily challenge on January 1st, 2017. At the time, Nanu did not exist. So I actually created my own framework in Scala, that is a different language based on Java, that is mostly functional programming. And I basically hacked something that used the processing libraries in the background, but was using the Java, the Scala syntax, and all the Scala libraries. And I started using this. So I actually made 2 years of dailies using this hacked framework based on Scala, where I forced myself to learn functional programming, to learn all these new concepts that were a bit foreign to me, while still trying to challenge me and doing something new. And then I was kind of fed up with Scala because I was thinking it's not best language for what we're trying to do. And I just read something about Rust. And being the geek I am, I just Googled creative coding Rust. And then I found the Nanu framework. And I was like, okay, this looks interesting because it's like three guys. I think there's only three guys in the core team, really based on their own needs. I think they were based in Australia at the time. And that's also a huge factor for me because I was able to jump in their Slack channel. And we were on this roughly the same time zone. And that's something that was a first for me to be able to speak to people like without a huge delay when you were asking for questions. And they were so nice to me answering the basic question I had about Rust, about the language and about the way they were thinking about how to make creative coding in Rust, that I was like, yeah, okay, screw Scala. I'm going to switch to something completely different, something new, just to challenge myself again, to learn this new language that looks really interesting, to learn this new framework. And I know that those guys will be helping me because like they're really close in the sense of no time difference. Right now, that's false because two of them went to Germany to make a creative studio there. So it's like, again, we're back into the time difference. So that's my process through this generative daily challenge. And to be fair, Rust, I would say that I'm still more productive if I were to do the same stuff in Java and processing. But Rust forces you to think in a way that will make you better somehow. It's a really weird language because when you try to do whatever you been used to, Rust will say no most of the time. We will say, no, this is wrong. You should not do this. And I'm like, yeah, but I've been doing this for ages and it works. Why won't you to let me do this? And it's like, it's not safe. So you have to work in a way that the most stressful example I had was if you want to do an interaction between two elements, two circles, two particles. In Java, you can just take one, take the other, and modify both of them at the same time. Rust will tell you, no, if you modify one, you cannot modify another one at the same time. It's not safe. You have to do something that splits them before, and then you can modify both sides of what you have, but you cannot take them at the same time. I was like, what? That's why the first week or 2 weeks of me playing with Rust were like super simple stuff, because I couldn't manage to work with interaction of two elements, something that I use like all the time. So it was really not painful, because it's obviously me that decided that I wanted to do this, but it was like super humbling in a sense. Like, I know nothing about programming because this language is just saying me no all the time. So after 300 days, roughly, I start to understand more about the language. I can feel when the compiler is going to complain. I can feel when the language is going to say no. I still do not understand everything, but I'm reaching the point where I'm as confident as I am in processing than I am in Rust and Nanu. And every time I need a new feature, I just can ask the Nanu guys. And somehow it happens that they manage to squeeze the feature in the new version of it. So it's like super nice to have those really nice guys that are willing to help me and the other guys on the Slack to just add the new features that we need. But it's also really weird. If you Google Nanu, most of the examples that come up are by me. And I'm like, yeah, we should spread the word a little bit more that it's actually doable to do this. If you have any questions about Nanu or whatever, you can jump into the Slack. I will give you whatever information I have. I will give you all the knowledge that I have gathered around the year if you strike with any issue. But also, to be fair, a lot of people, when you post something online, they ask for the code and they ask, what software are you using? Because most people think that the software will make half the work and will decide the final aesthetic of what you've been doing. And for me, I use mostly the line function. As soon as I can draw a line, I'm happy. And I can draw a line in any framework. It could be open framework, it could be processing, it could be Nanu. The result is going to be the same. It's just one line. So I don't think that the framework will influence the way it looks. I think the framework will influence the way you think about what you've been doing. And what makes sense in this framework might be harder to program in this other language. So the final look of the piece will be completely defined by Weaver's coding, but the way what you can code might be influenced by what you're using.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes sense. So earlier you mentioned that in the early days, you were learning by copying and it wasn't very creative. 1,000 pieces later and years of experience with other tools like processing and Nanu and more, what is your creative process like now? Where do you get ideas and inspiration from? And does it always start with a line?
So the really interesting part, I think, about doing this daily challenge is basically you don't have any day off. That's the point of the challenge. So you start to think about what you're going to do today all the time. If you take the train, if you look at things, you say, oh, these colors are nice. Maybe I can take a picture and then I can use the colors from this picture to use in this new piece that we'll have to do to be doing later. So sometimes I find something on the internet, I see something that I want to replicate to try to mimic, and then I build a new modular brick in my system. Because basically, after doing this for 3 years, I have a lot of functions that can do most of the geometry that you might ever think about. So it's mostly about how do I combine those bricks to create something that is slightly different, or adding a new brick to create a new range of interaction that is possible. On most days, to be fair, I just tweak the previous days. It's a training. I don't know how to say, because I've been talking about this with colleagues and everything, because when I talk to this project to colleagues at work, they're like, how do you manage to do 1,000 of those? I'm like, have you tried? Because it's as simple as this sometimes. If you open up your editor, you find the code that was here from yesterday and you just tweak it. And then things start to differ, starts to evolve. And you're like, oh, okay, maybe that's an interesting direction. And then you have your idea for today. And it's going to sound really weird, but sometimes I look at what I've been doing in the past. Like, I don't remember everything that I've been doing. So I just look at my Instagram feed and I look at the stuff I was doing like 1 year ago or 18 months ago. I was like, oh, that's nice. Maybe I should do this again. But the way I'm doing it again is completely different because I've learned different tricks, different techniques, different ways to do stuff. So looking at my previous work to get inspiration about what I should do next. And this includes the previous daily code that is there all the time where I just tweak stuff or add a new interaction or reset the system or something. Or I just look at what I was doing before. I was like, oh, that was a good idea. Why didn't I stop there? But since I've grown in the days between those two dailies, I can just add my new experience and do this. So my creative process is basically, there's no process. It's just start. There's a deadline at the end of the day. You have to do something. It can be very minimal. It could be just a color palette change. And I've done this 2 or 3 times in the span of 3 years. Or it could be adding a new function, could be reversing indexes, because like what I'm doing today and yesterday, I'm drawing lines that go in spirals around a center. So how do you define a spiral? Do you start from the center and draw in circles, growing slowly from the center? Or do you take the other spiral, that is, you grow outside and then you start to go on the side? And it's just like shifting those will give you a completely different feel, but the code itself is just like really similar. So the amount of diversity you can get by just tweaking a few lines helps you along the way very well. So that's my creative process for all this series, is like I look at what I've been doing so far and I just have to do it. So it comes naturally after all. But it's a training. After 3 years, I'm really confident now that if you ask me any creative task, if you give me 1 week, I can give you 7 ideas. Some will be good, some will be bad, some will be useless. But at least we can talk about those 7 ideas. We can iterate from those ideas. So we can actually move forward because we have something to talk about. We have something to start from. And that's the real goal of doing this, is to be able to get to the point where I can create ideas at this speed. Even if it's not going to be perfect, it's going to be enough to start an interesting conversation with people that want to work on something different. So that's my key takeaway from doing this, is you should be prepared if someone asks you to do something really big. And the best way I know how to do this is just to go on and go on and go on and just produce. And sometimes it will be good, sometimes it will be bad, but who cares? You have something to say and you have something to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of like the text example you mentioned earlier, where the artifact is described in sentences and a lot of stuff can happen. There's a lot of space for interpretation between the words, a lot of possibilities.
True.
It's very cool. And so I'm interested, at a very high level, how does this creative side, the art, the outcome of the creative coding, how does this intersect or weave into your daily work when you're thinking of generative systems and entertainment at CSL? How does that kind of creative exposure influence your ideas, and maybe vice versa? How does some of the stuff you're thinking about at work change the ideas you have for your generative work?
So I have actually a really nice deck of like 200 slides that explain my whole creative process when it comes to my daily work. But the gist of it is basically, if you look at Sol LeWitt, for example, it's an American artist that is really famous for doing this conceptual art. So is exposed at the MoMA in New York, in most museums across the US, but is not drawing anything. It's just giving you the instructions to draw the piece. So if you go to the entrance of the MoMA, you have one of his piece, but that was drawn by somebody else. And he's telling that the process itself might have more value than just the output of what you've been doing so far. And I think all those generative systems are the same, because whenever you run the system again, if you take a different random value, if you take a different noise field, you have something that looks really similar in the terms of aesthetics and the flow of the piece, but the actual output will be slightly different. So you can identify the systems because they produce diversity of output that looks the same, but it's not exactly the same. And I think that's the key point here. And if we're able to create generative systems using whatever code we have that allows the user or the customer to find themselves into whatever the system is making, you have something that makes a lot of sense to them. So it's really abstract, I understand. But to give you an example, for example, I made a collaboration with Issey Miyake, that is one of the biggest fashion designers in Japan. And the goal of the collaboration was they had a really nice bag that they were designing. And they were wanting for colors, basically. And I was talking with them because I did PJ for one of the shows of the band they were using for their fashion show. So that's how I met them. And I told them about what I was doing. And the guy asked me, how do you choose your colors? And I tell him, I take a picture and I have a system that takes a palette from the picture. And it's a system that does clustering in this color space that is really nice because it understands the way we look at colors and everything. And I fine tune the algorithm so that it gives me the base colors and all the accent colors. So I have this huge, nice contrast of interesting colors that I can use in whatever I'm doing. And he was like, yeah, I want this. Can you make me a system where I take a picture and then you have a bag that represents the picture? And I'm like, yeah, I can build it you for this. So that was my first actual creative coding work that was part of my main work, my daily job that we got paid for. Because up until now, it was basically me doing my own stuff on the side. So I built them a system where they can just take a picture and then I will tell them which colors they need to weave in the cloth at which position, so that it creates the bag in a specific order of the colors and everything. So then what happens? Basically, since the system is completely automated, whatever you think about the picture is translated to the bag. Because when you look at the bag, you want to talk about the picture. You want to talk about the story behind it. You want to talk about, do you know that this bag is coming from this picture of, so it was the stained glass of the Cathedral of Prague. And then suddenly you build value because the system, the generative system, is a black box that allows you to input something that makes sense to you, the picture, for example. And then it reflects, the final product reflects what the system has been doing, just the picture. So that's my main philosophy, my main line of work is, how do we create those systems that will allow the user or the customer to just be part of the creative process because there is one input that is open for whatever stuff you want to input to the system? So I use color because it's really easy to understand, but I'm also trying to do this for toys. I made a robotic toy that is selling in Japan right now. It's called Toyo, and it's basically a really small cube that has no color, but you can put whatever toy you put on top of it, and then the toy becomes smart. So again, you do not want to play with a toy. You want to play with your toy. And as soon as you do this, whatever you've been dreaming of becomes unique and personalized to you. So that's the power of the generative system for me, is we can now switch to a world where everything has been mass-produced to appeal to everybody. But no, I say we can mass-design something that will be meaningful to you, but not to your neighbor, because it's going to be taking some information about you that you will willingly be giving to the system. So that's where I think we can use all this generative background that exists here to create those systems. And I think we're going to see more of this, especially in terms of entertainment, where we have generative fiction, we have generative books, we have generative songs, we have a lot of stuff that are starting to be generated on the fly. And then we just need to tweak the input so that it makes sense to you rather than to everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. And so moving towards that goal and coming from the background that you have, can you talk to us a little bit about the industry at large? Like, what's missing? What do you wish existed? And what do you think it would take to get to a world where we're able to build generative systems with inputs that are highly personalized for people so that those experiences and the outputs of those experiences are completely different from one person to another?
The real answer to this is going to be the whole manufacturing process that we have right now is made to mass produce stuff. So it's really hard to do on-demand manufacturing that will be able to create whatever makes sense to each customer at the scale of one customer. It's not something that we've built our society above this. So I think it's going to be a really huge change in the soft industry where everything doesn't have to be materially produced. So that was talking about generative fiction. I was talking about maybe generative movies. If you think about the movie as something that might be rendered on the fly on your computer right now. And then suddenly it's different from games, because on games you're playing a story that someone has decided and you just can go weaving through the branches of a story. I'm thinking about the story that will be knowing that you're in a bad mood and you want a happy ending. I'm thinking about something that might say, oh, a friend of yours just went abroad a few weeks ago, so you might want to have a strong friendship story here. So all this information that might influence the outcome of whatever story is happening, so that it makes sense to you. So there's this notion of something that has to be physically made is going to be really hard to do, but if it's on the soft side, we can definitely go for this. The second part is going to be the change of the perception of the value of whatever we're making here, because you're not going to be able to talk to your friends about the latest movie you've seen, because it's going to be different as the other people are seeing the same experience. It's going to be their experience. So we need to think about that we might be talking about how the experience was different because it made sense to us. So how our personal experience will influence something that they might have missed because they were not in the same situation. So it shifts the value of the entertainment that we've been making so far, because suddenly it's not about shared experience with your neighbors. It's about your unique experience that you might want to share with your neighbor because it's going to be slightly different. So there's value here because you're teasing them with something that they might not experience because they're not in the same state of mind that you are. So that's what I'm really excited about. It's like we can suddenly say that we're going to be in the same movie theater, but you're going to see something different. And I would like to talk to Boo about what did you see? It's like if you look at the Pulp Fiction and the MacGuffin in the case, what do you think in the case? And that's the perfect answer to this. It's like, if it were me, I think I would have seen this, because in my personalized experience, I would have seen the MacGuffin that would tell me that the story makes more sense to me. But for a different person, it would be something different. So this is what I imagine will come out of all this generative stuff.
That's super interesting. I'm really looking forward to seeing how this continues to evolve and shift. And so on a similar note, what has been one of your most ambitious creative projects to date? Is it the Daily Art or one of your other projects?
The craziest was Eon. The most ambitious might be the Dailies, exactly. Because to be fair, I don't know when to stop. I don't know if it makes any difference. I don't know what I'm going to miss if I stop. Because it's so part of your daily routine, though, that like if you train, if you exercise regularly, you understand what it means to be on a routine where you just like wake up and you do your stuff and that's it. And no, I've seen the benefits of doing this and I have no reason to stop. So I'm going to continue, I guess. I don't think I'm going to be able to go up to people levels of like 10 years of doing this. I don't know. Maybe that's possible, but I'm still far away from this. But the challenge is here. Like, you have to think about it every day. You have to plan. Do you need to take 5 minutes that day? Do you need to take half an hour? And especially when you're working with code, you always have the problem where something might break that you have no idea why, and there's no way back. And it's already 2 a.m. and you're like, what do I do? Do I try to roll back to something that worked yesterday, or do I pursue this? And I have to say, there's one time I just fell asleep on my computer while it was rendering the final stuff of the day, because I was like, I need to finish this. And I just fell asleep in front of the computer and just woke up at 6 a.m. and the animation was ready. I was like, okay, I'm going to publish it today. It was made yesterday, in quotes, but that's the only day I kind of failed the challenge. But that's the most ambitious, yeah. It's like to put the pressure of going, finding something new. I don't know, seeing the reaction of people is also really nice, because like there's one day where I did something really simple that I was basically obviously slacking, And that's the day I got most responses from people. Like, you should do this, you should try this, you should do this. Like, people completely understand what I was doing, especially the guys in the same field. And they blew my cover right at heart. They completely understand what I was going through. So that's really interesting to be part of this community of people. That's just like Twitter and Instagram, if I guess you've been following us as well. The interactions between the people that are doing this type of stuff are really interesting. It's like, you ask questions, people are going to answer, and they're going to give you code, they're going to give you whatever you want. Most of the likes I have are coming from people that did the same. So that's also really rewarding. But at the same time, I don't think if I stopped today without saying anything, I don't think anyone will notice. So it's so, I wouldn't say that it has no meaning of doing this, because it's not obviously not for the likes and everything, but it's interesting to see how far people can perceive this piece of stuff. So I'm really happy when someone asks me, can I have a high resolution print of what I've been doing? I'm like, yeah, it's like 2 hours of work for me, because Nanu is not able to export something that is bigger than your screen. I don't know why. So I need to do a crazy tile rendering of the stuff, and it takes me a few hours to just produce one high resolution image. But I do this for the people that ask, because like, I'm really happy to see them interested in what I've been doing. So that would be the most ambitious. The most crazy stuff I did was the Eon app with Jean-Michel Jarre. So Jean-Michel Jarre is one of the biggest electronic musicians of the world, and he is actually a Sony Music artist. And that's how I managed to meet him, because he's always interested in the latest uses of technology to create stuff. So he's been playing with electronic music for 50 years, more than this, 60 years maybe. And in our lab, there is one team that is making an automatic composition system where you just feed the system your previous pieces, and through machine learning, it tries to understand your style and will recreate pieces in your own style. So he came to our lab to see this team, and my boss was like, oh, but by the way, we have also another French guy that is doing weird stuff. Do you want to meet him? And so they came to my office and was like, why are you here? Like, it's like, why is Jean-Michel Jarre in my office just knocking on the door? Like, yeah, your boss told me you were doing weird stuff. Can you explain me what you've been doing? So I talked to him about this generative systems, all this stuff I've been doing. And then at the end of the talk, I just told him, like, we're talking about the constraints that we need to impose to get creative. And I told him, yeah, I'm doing this crazy challenge when I'm making a new animation every day for 2.5 years at the time. And he saw my Instagram film and he was like, yeah, this is what I need. I want this. And I was like, what for? I'm making this crazy app where the music is going to be generated on the fly, and I want visuals that are similarly generated according to the music and everything. So that's how it started. Like, basically completely random encounter. And I was able to show him maybe like 700 pieces what I've been doing. And that links back to what I was telling you before. At that point, I felt I was ready to tell him, oh, you want something like this? How many do you want? Give me 2 months. Oh, that's nice. I have like, I can have 60 of them. But then he asked, yeah, but it has to be responsive. It has to link with the music and everything. So that's why it ended up in something different. But in the end, I think I spent only 2 months on this. So it was my regular day job plus working on French time on this. So it was the following 8 hours. So basically up until 2 a.m. every day, I was working on this for 2 months. And he was calling me most days to know what I was thinking about the new developments and everything. And I was able to squeeze, I think it's 22 different systems that react to music, that have a subsystem within. So from 60, we went to 22 that are more interesting, that have reactive, that have more potential than what I've been doing daily. And we're still working on the updates and everything. So that was the craziest part of my creative journey so far, is how to squeeze everything that I've been doing into one app. So that's working with WebGL, JavaScript, something that I knew nothing about, on a phone. So you have limited resources. You don't know if the phone is going to be fast enough to run everything. And just work with this system that outputs music, but you don't know exactly what's going to be there. So it has to be generic, but at the same time, you get metadata from the music. So you can tweak the settings to make the visual feel better with the music. So it's a super challenging project that is still ongoing. Still have a lot of stuff that we are planning for the future. But yeah, craziest part was this Eon app. The most ambitious was Daily Challenge.
That's super cool. And so just to cap this amazing conversation off, what is a key piece of advice that you would share with a younger version of yourself or someone looking to explore this path?
I would say that with the amount of resources that you can find online right now, I think you are very, very advantaged in a sense, because there's the Coding Train, for example. I don't know if you know, it's from Daniel Schiffman that is doing this online YouTube series of creative coding tutorials from the basics to crazy machine learning stuff. And he does everything in a really entertaining manner. So if you just follow this guy, you're able to know all the techniques that you have, that you need to do what I'm doing. But what I would say to someone that wants to get into the field is ship, finish as much as possible. Because especially the younger version of me would always tweak, will always try to do something better and never release anything. It was trying to make it look the best you could without actually making a final piece. But you learn by just saying it's over and knowing when to say it's over. So my advice would be go online, find all the information you need, and just say it's over, release a piece, go to the next one. You're going to learn something different. You're going to be better. And then if you really need to, you can come back and revisit what you've been doing before. It doesn't matter. You don't have to keep everything hidden and not publish anything because it's not perfect. There's no perfection in what we do. So it's just, is it good enough for today? For me, I also learned this through this daily process. It's okay to say, oh, that's it. I'm tired. It's enough. Publish. And then it's over. And then the next day I can come back and do something better or something different. So that's my piece of advice is go online, but release often.
Absolutely. Those are some great words of advice and an excellent way to end the episode. Alexis, thanks so much for being on the show today. This was awesome.
Thanks for having me. And it was really interesting to go back to this. I think I actually talked a lot, far more than what I was expecting. But yeah, so thanks for all the questions, all the interesting input. And I'm really glad to be part of this project of yours.
Well, that's a wrap. Thank you for joining me for another episode of Tech Plus Art podcast. We're a very small team behind this project, so we greatly appreciate all your support. If you love our content and these podcasts, consider leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts and sharing it with a friend or two. This really does go a long way in helping us get discovered and reach more creators. As always, you can find us online at maketechart.com and at maketechart everywhere else. See you soon.